it's high towards the play there. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside. And Taylor has scored. And that surely means it's the Premier League for Swindon Town now.
Hello and welcome to the Washbag Podcast. I'm Ron Smith. Joining me for another podcast is Sam Morshead, Chief Sports Writer for the Swindon Advertiser. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Ron.
And also returning, we did think he would be leaving, left out of the country. We thought we got rid of him, but anyway, Chris Panks is back. Hi.
Hello.
There, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Ron. How's it going?
Yeah, very good, thank you, yes.
Good.
Well, I've been not for well over the last couple of weeks, so I might be a bit sort of coughing and spluttering a little bit, and the voice is still not gone, but it's been a fantastic... end of the season. At least it did continue. Wasn't the end result that we all wanted in the playoffs. But we had two, fantastic games. It wasn't necessarily the one at home against Brentford, but the one at Brentford itself. We couldn't have imagined the way that would sort of pan out in the end. But, I mean, Sam, what were your sort of thoughts on the whole sort of playoff?
I think it was value for money for those who managed to get along to both games in the end. I think the first is always a bit turgid. Any first leg of a playoff thing we've seen with all bar the Burton and Bradford game, they've all been pretty poor to now. But the second half was just something truly spectacular. I think everyone who was in that end at Griffin Park when Aidan Flint headed that 94th minute corner, 95th minute corner
home, the end, yeah.
I think they'll remember that. And I've had people tweeting me saying, well, at least that was a memory that we can smile about. And really, they did very well. The players really showed that they had a hunger to get through. When it goes to penalties, someone's going to lose. Someone's going to miss. It happened to be Miles. I feel sorry for him. But barring his and one of the Brentford penalties, which was fairly meek and went straight down the middle, they were all pretty decent penalties.
Yeah, it was very high standard. It's unusual for a team to hit all five of their penalties as well. And
exactly.
I mean, Wes had a little bit of an injury.
He did, he had some cramp at the end, which might not have been able to be as athletic as he might have liked. But it was ultimately very disappointing, but you can't help but just be in awe by some of the games that we've seen this season, and that almost topped the lot.
Yeah, I mean, like me, Chris, you're watching the game on the telly, that second leg. I presume following it on Twitter as well.
No, I didn't actually. I went along to the County Ground because they had a big screen on the pitch, which was... with friend of the podcast, Matt Kilford, as well.
Mm-hmm.
I did say to him beforehand, I can see it going to penalties, because we'd just seen that late winner for Yeovil, sort of with 5 minutes to go. And I just felt that to have that full gambit of drama across both playoff semi-finals, it was just going to be there. And I think that the team, to get as far as they did, particularly with Brentford's home record, was, you know, creditable.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, I mean, they're the best performing hosts of any side in League One this season.
They've only dropped 17 points, I think.
And, I mean, just the manner of the comeback. I mean, I was expecting, you know, at the start of the second half, when that goal went in, that it was going to be a, you know, 4 or 5 run score. And, you know, to have Swindon actually come back and fight for, you know, a result... to push it right through to the end.
I think that was the one bit of sadness and the one disappointment was how poor the goals we conceded were. You know, how the team shot themselves in the foot, really. And if they hadn't given away those stupid goals, we'd be going to Wembley in a couple of weeks.
Well, it's all ifs and buts.
Yeah, of course.
It's great with hindsight, but, you know, they did very well to get back to from where they were. And going behind, 3-1 behind within 2 minutes, having just got that momentum before half-time, many teams could have just wilted, especially with the nature of that goal for Donaldson. So they showed a lot of self-belief, a lot of strength. They've done it a lot this season in plenty of times of difficulty and adversity and a lot of uncertainty. And I think it just summed up the season. I think I called it a brilliant, brash, brutal mess, I think, in the advert. And that's kind of how I feel the whole season has been. It was perfect to suit what's happened this year.
And it wasn't just, I mean, obviously the players themselves pulled through, but it was also K-Mac and his substitutions as a result of conceding that early goal in the second half, which actually made a change. And what I was going to say earlier about sort of following it on Twitter, which I was at home watching it on the TV, was the amount of criticism that K-Mac was getting for that first half and at half time, about the players. And then even when the substitutions came on, people said, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. Mm. Why is he bringing Rafa on?
Change the game.
Exactly. It changed the game. And it's good to see all those doubters were, you know, very quiet after that.
Well, yeah,
but again, what I really wanted to see was the credit that they were subsequently given to K-Mac. But they didn't. And you know,
people have got it in for him.
Exactly.
I can sort of see why, because it's a hard act to follow, isn't it? But it's comparing apples with oranges. Again, we've spoken about this on the podcast before, that people are comparing Kevin McDonald to Paolo Di Canio, but it's a different club now, as we've seen with the list of players retained and released this week.
Yeah.
It's a completely different landscape. I'm not quite sure. Some people have got it in for K-Mac, some people have got it in for 4-5-1. I wrote in my column this week that either is ludicrous, because how can you have it in for a formation? And actually, that formation changed the game, because you could see it in the first half. Their central midfielders were absolutely bossing that game. They were to every second ball. They were challenging and scrapping. There was so much space between the front line, the midfield and the defence that Brentford could very easily control possession and build pressure. Quite how we went in at half time with a goal was almost
great, because I mean that's something which we haven't done previously, is actually taking that chance, you know, the one chance that we have had.
Yeah. You can argue in the first half that it's a bit of a waste to have Ferry on the right, but the manager saw that as an error and brought him centrally when he brought Rafa on. And the team looked markedly different after those changes, as you say.
Yeah.
I'd compare it to what happened in the game against Coventry at home in October, and how the reaction is very different to a manager, and that's how it's entirely perceived by the fans as the individual and not his tactical ability. Because back in October, Town were 2-0 down at home against Coventry. He took off Matt Ritchie. He brought on Alan Navarro, Paolo Di Canio. And he let Gary Roberts run free, and Gary Roberts completely tore Coventry apart, and he scored, and they came back to draw 2-2. That was exactly the same sort of move as Kevin McDonald did by taking off both strikers and effectively appearing to go more defensive at Brentford. It's exactly the same.
You've got a better memory than me, anyway.
Yeah. but that's what I say. Di Canio, masterstroke. McDonald, no comment really after the game about him. I was confused at the time by the substitution. I have to admit, I tweeted as much. It didn't really make sense. But you saw what happened. And after the game, I spoke at length to Alan McCormack. Yeah. He said they put in a holding midfielder, Brentford, and they didn't know how to deal with it, Swindon. And it changed completely after they were able to counter that. And I think if Byrne hadn't got sent off, me and Andy Warren were sitting in the press box, and we were feeling actually quite comfortable that they might go and nick a fourth goal in that, because they did seem to really have a control of the game. But
that's where the momentum.
But then McCormack has to go back to left back, then they lose that amount in midfield, as much as James Collins did a brilliant job slotting in the middle of midfield where he's never played before. That red card did have a big bearing on those last sort of 20 minutes of the game.
But the other thing that had a massive bearing on those final sort of 15-20 minutes was Wes Fondrigan. And you know, the saves that he made, you know, in that final period. I mean, it wasn't an onslaught from Brentford by any means. They always looked quite jaded towards the end, but they did have, you know, they had the only chances in that extra time period. And Wes down, I mean, there was one save quite low down to his right hand side that went out. That was right towards the end. And again, you know, after a shaky period from Wes over a couple of weeks, to see him sort of pull through and keep us in the game.
I think what we've seen, in terms of the shakiness from Wes, hasn't been his shot stopping. I think that's been the same. The fact is, he until Brentford, where they play quite a deep defensive line, they have been playing quite a high line with Aidan Flint and Darren Ward, and that has allowed quicker strikers to get in behind, and that means that Fodringham has had to come up off his line more and more, and that's caused him to, well, and he's doing all sorts of tough stuff.
He's not been sent off, fortunately.
Amazingly. Yeah, I'm not sure how, but I think he showed exactly what he's worth at Brentford. There must have been 8 fantastic saves during the game. So we'll hope that he remains a Swindon player for next season. And hopefully they can offer him some sort of extended deal as well. But he's a championship quality goalkeeper, so you wouldn't be surprised to see someone come in for him.
And he said on Twitter the other day that he's very keen to stay next season. He's obviously got the contract for another year, which is great to see. I mean, he won our Player of the Season award by some distance. It'll be, you know, it's just a sort of a statistical sort of look at it, really. Interesting that Nathan Thompson came nowhere in that list. but obviously, you know, the supporters sort of voted in the actual one quite highly. I mean, you know, in terms of player of the season, Chris, would you agree with Fodringham?
I think so, yeah, Fodringham. I'm not sure if... Yeah, I can't really think that any others have been above that. I think Ward has had an excellent season, and it's a testament to how well he looks after himself, how many games that he's played as well. Consecutive games for a 34-year-old in a quite physical league. He's done very well, I think, and he's really been the sort of calm head at the back. And I think Aidan Flint has developed as a result of that, really. So maybe Ward would be a close second.
And obviously you, Sam?
Yeah, I agree entirely with Darren Ward. I think Nathan has been fantastic. Mm. He's broken through. It is a breakout season. And I don't think anyone could have expected him to fill the boots of Paul Caddis quite as well as he did. Equally, Wes has been sensational throughout. But for me, Darren Ward, taking out his debut at Oxford, which was horrible, he's massive, isn't he? He's big, he's bold, he's experienced, he's calm.
He's a caveman.
He can't really pass the ball very well, but everything else he's got in his locker. And for him to be involved in the squad next year will be big, because there will be a fair amount of youth in it. And it's players like him who'll be able to teach others how to develop. And I think that as a man and as a footballer, he's been a huge, huge asset to Swindon Town this year.
Okay. I mean, going back to the playoffs, I mean, one final thought about the playoffs was about the attendances. Mm. I mean, the home game at the County Ground, only 10,000, which is good, but disappointing considering, you know, last time we had the playoffs at that level, they were a lot higher. I mean, kick-off times weren't great, but also at Brentford, plenty of empty seats as well. I mean, Chris, do you sort of think that people losing a bit of love in the playoffs, or was it more to a sort of scheduling?
I don't know, really. It's hard to know what kept people away. I mean, being on Sky probably didn't help, but there's no difference between Charlton.
That's always been the case, though, hasn't it?
I think it might be to do with how the team's form has sort of dropped off since January-ish, from looking like potential champions to clinging on to that last playoff place. That might have had an impact, but you certainly didn't feel that it was quiet, and a lot of people were singing, and it was kind of busy roundabout where I was. So, no, I don't know why people have stayed away, but it could be to do with the scheduling.
Yeah.
Certainly on Monday, and not having enough seats at Brentford. You know, it was 1,800, I think, was it?
We could have taken a lot more there, and they certainly didn't sell out their allocation on the Stratton.
No, they brought about 1,500, I think, which is... Fine.
Which is fine, yes. Better than their usual following.
But I just think that the quality is different. The quality of the league is different this year than it was against Charlton. So maybe there's an excitement. The excitement's dropped a bit. Swindon versus Brentford is a bit different from Swindon versus Charlton, who looked like a championship side at that point. So... maybe it's just a dip in quality in the league.
Yeah, okay. I'm not very good at remembering what happens over the course of the season, so I just do a short season reflection in three words, please.
Really?
I mean, I'll start it off with Paolo buggered off, or we're not rich anymore. Sam, any three-word reflections in terms of a season review? I know you said that you're writing a big...
I managed to do 4,000 words for it for Monday's supplement, but I could have done 15,000, I think. I think three words to sum it up. Chaos, brilliance, absurdity.
Good, yeah.
Mine would be winds of change.
Winds of change, very good, yeah.
I think that it's going to be a very different club next season.
Yeah.
So all the moaners will be really happy.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ways that they're going to change, of course, over the course of summer is the retained list.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's different. I mean, it's called a retain list because it used to be that clubs had the, you know, the power of holding on to the players. You know, we want to keep you. You are staying. So it's a bit of a strange term, I think, now to use that. But you know, really, you know, announced this week about Lee Bedwell, Aidan Flink, Miles Story, and Nathan Thompson. The club want to exercise options or offer new deals, and they're wanting to negotiate with Alan McCormack. I mean, do you think, Chris, that they're the right? You know, you'd want to see them retain next season.
Absolutely,
those five?
No, I like those players. Yeah. I think that a lot of people were very disappointed about who was released.
Yes.
Certainly, most keenly felt, I think, will be Joe De Vera, Rafa De Vita, and the character that is Simon Ferry that everybody, you know, loves. He's been with the club 3 or 4 years. And he came as somebody who'd never started a professional game and now looks like he probably is good enough to step up to the Championship, possibly as a squad player. And I think that a Championship squad, a Championship team will get a very good asset for free.
Yeah.
I'd be very happy to see Nathan Thompson stay.
Mm. No, definitely. Yeah, I mean, of the ones that they want to keep, I mean, yeah, I'd definitely take all of them, to be honest. I mean, I've always had some concerns about Aidan Flint and his abilities and his rush challenges at the back, but I, you know, have seen a lot of improvement from him over the course of this season. So, you know, certainly, you know, a player that we did obviously pay money for a couple of years back and worthwhile to keep, and he's obviously young and fits with the club's sort of future. I mean, of the ones that are leaving, obviously Simon Ferry is one that, as Chris said, stands out. You run a piece in the advert with him this week. Mm. Disappointed to see him go. I mean, have you got any inkling where he will end up? I certainly don't want to see him at MK Dons.
I think it's a huge possibility.
It's not far enough north for me.
No, I know. I think if you're using north as a reason, which it might be part of the reason, that's obviously not going to be something that's going to go down well with fans. But it's where he gets the best deal now, because it's entirely up to him. It's not down to the club. The club had the chance to exercise a one-year option on him and chose not to. Obviously, his wages were going up to that £2,800 a week, to fit in line with a total footballing budget of £2.4 million. £2,800 is a fair chunk out. It's probably around about £1,000 more than what would be your average, roughly.
Mm-hmm. But as a key player?
As a key player, yeah. Absolutely, but it's also down to the manager. Does the manager see him as a key player? Now, fans might not understand if he does not see him as a key player, but he's the manager. He's in charge of the team. If he's got other players that he's going to bring in, or he's planning on using others that he's already got there instead of Ferry, then you've got to think, well, he's making the choice. Mm. If he fails to get McCormack as well, if he ends up leaving, then there is a massive, massive hole. Because Alan Navarro, after his various injuries, just does not look a shade of the player that he was at Brighton. Equally, it's probably important you play a three-man central midfield with Navarro for him to work effectively, and that's what happened with him when he was down at Brighton. So he's going to have to recruit heavily if he fails to get McCormack, and that means youngsters, and a lot of them in the middle of midfield. Alex Ferguson is a very good young player, but you can't expect him to run the middle of midfield in his first season as a pro. The same for Lewis Thompson. So it is interesting. I know that McCormack wants to stay. Here is his preferred destination for next season. But again, he's got a young family, just like Ferry. He's got to be able to have the right offer for him and for all of his loved ones. So we've still got a few interesting weeks ahead. And the way that the squad takes shape, I imagine the priorities will be based around now whether or not Alan McCormack is nailed down to a contract. Because I think that is a hugely important piece of next year's jigsaw to be sorted, and it needs to be sorted as soon as possible.
Mm. And particularly the sense, as you say, the central midfield, because Tommy Miller going as well.
Mm. He's versatile as well. You know, McCormack can, well, he will play anyway.
Slot in, but considering we've been playing Luongo, I know that Jed would like to buy him, but then that's probably not going to happen. It's a bit wishful thinking. But it is certainly, I mean, that central midfield area, such an important industrious area of the team, needs strengthening. I mean, in terms of sort of, I mean, we've got a question here from Jack Edward Duffy, asked sort of, you know, which positions do we need to strengthen? And obviously, central midfield is the obvious one that's sort of screaming out. I mean, are there any other sort of positions?
I think they probably need a striker, depending on whether Paul Benson comes back. I'm not convinced he's...
He's got another year to go, hasn't he?
He does have another year. But again, he's on wages of around about the same as Ferry. Mm-hmm. So I think you will find that if they get the right offer, for someone of Paul's age, though, he's 33, then it's not going to be quite as easy to find a club as someone like Adam Williams, who's 26.
Permanent moves because of the money.
And the location. For instance, he didn't want to go up to Bradford because it's too far north. So he will be part of the Swindon squad for pre-season as it stands. So will Adam Rooney, so will Andy Williams, so will James Collins, and so will Miles Storey.
Because if we're talking about money, I mean, that's the issue, because we got four strikers who are probably, in terms of wages, on the top earner scale, aren't they? You know that they've been brought, you know, the parallel players, probably very attractive deals to come in.
Yeah.
You know, you probably need to have two of them moved away to sort of freshen up, to actually bring in that additional player striker.
But it's all about getting the offer if they are. And the offer still has to be right for the club.
Exactly.
They have to be able to budget between the immediate cash up front for a player sale and working out on how much the wages would cost over the course of the season.
And they've still got to fill 11 shirts a week. So,
hopefully 14.
Well, yeah, no, you're right, of course. But you know what I mean? We've had times this season where we've not had a full subs bench, be it for belligerent reasons or you know, any other. But you know, I suppose that we were talking about the playoffs just a minute ago, but that playoff in many ways was synonymous with sort of what has happened this season, because for all we can be proud of the players for getting as far as they did, the and for digging themselves out of the hole, but they also dug the hole. And that has sort of, that has been the way that the season is shaped, because we're sort of scuppered by the decisions of the previous manager and board. And now that's where we are again. We need to solve those issues, which is probably why Ferry and De Vera and De Vita are the sacrificial lambs, really. And I think that there'll probably be a couple more.
In terms of their contracts were expiring, and they were the easy options to, and we would come into a minute, in terms of sustainability and budgets.
So. Well, again, Joe's wages would have risen the same as Simon's would have risen next year. I don't know about Rafa's, but Rafa was saying that he was expecting to move on anyway. He was wanting a different challenge. I think that's a very different thing for me. De Vera and Ferry are the two that they're separate.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Rafa, I mean, he doesn't really fit with into a position in terms of his natural striking position. He hasn't succeeded, and there are better wingers out there that the club could bring in if he indeed even on loan. So that was always an obvious departure. Nonetheless, he has performed very well on his impact appearances and in other occasions, plenty of goals from the outside positions.
Yeah, plenty of goals as well, you know, without really being played as a striker. And, and he was always enthusiastic, and I think that the crowd always liked that about him. He would always give it 100%, which is great to see. But I don't know. Yeah, as you say, the sustainability is the key word at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I'll come on to that now. I mean, Jed McCrory the other day put out something on the club website for the first time in quite a while. It was quite short, but basically said last season the club operated with a playing budget of $4.5 million, and that's simply not sustainable. We're currently running at a considerable loss each month, which we were aware from the outset, but this cannot be rectified overnight. However, funds and plans are in place to see the club through this period as we work tirelessly towards a sustainable future across all areas of the business. As chairman, my responsibility and focus must be on the wider interests of the club, despite some good players leaving the club. We're very excited about next season, it says, and also the manager feels he's a good side with some excellent young players and a few quality additions which we are working on, which is good if they are. We feel that it can be challenging again at the right end of the table. All sounds good, and we were all aware in terms of the budgets that the model has changed. And there's a bit of speculation on BBC Wiltshire this week about the budgets being slashed by half or more than half. And Sam, do you kind of see in terms of how the budget would perform in relation In terms of the 4.5 million, in terms of other clubs operating League One this season, was that the highest budget?
It's my understanding that it was the third highest budget in the division behind Bournemouth and Sheffield United. Obviously, I don't know it for certain, but it's what I understand as being the case. Also, the figures that I am aware of compared to what the BBC are aware of are slightly different. I agree that it is roughly 50% being cut, but I believe it's going down to 2.4. But that's not just a playing budget, that's a football budget that I'm talking about, which will incorporate backroom staff as well.
Okay, well, that's great, because I mean, there's another question that I had from Ian Watkins, which asked if that £4.5 million budget was just the player's wage bill, or did that include signing on fees and the management wages?
In my opinion, it must include other parts than just the wages. Yep. If you think about how much the squad was what, it was 19 first team pros last season. I mean, that's a huge amount, £4.5 million budget just for playing wages. I believe that incorporated more than just the wages. I believe it was football salaries that you're talking about.
So in essence, this is the figure which the Football League would consider for their 60% turnover.
Yeah,
which would include
that's the impression.
Obviously that we had with the tribunal, James Collins. Mm. So it would include signing on fees and potential.
That's my look. That's my understanding. I don't want to put out too much misinformation. If it is misinformation, I'm only saying what I believe to be the case. But I think it's roughly upper mid table, 2.4, roughly in League One. Mm-hmm. Yeovil is around about 1.1. Tranmere was 800,000 this year. Brentford was about 2.5, so it's sort of that area, 2.53. You've got, on that budget, I say on that budget because I come into why it might not be immediately, you can challenge for a playoff place, no problem. It's the general structure of a club, and you're not just changing the budget here at Swindon Town this summer, you're changing the entire structure of how it's worked for the last five. Mm. And that doesn't happen. That means you can't expect a successful team next year. It just doesn't happen overnight. When you're bringing in youth and incorporating it with other pros and looking how to balance books and bring in revenue from other streams to be able to create the sustainable model. Because there's been a lot of overspend. You know, you're talking about a £4.5 million shortfall between what they're spending and what they're bringing in revenue previously, which was funded out of the pocket of Andrew Black. Now, you've got to be able to calm that down. And to be able to do that, it means cutting your cloth. And so it's going to be a difficult time, and it's not going to be as successful on the pitch, I don't think, in my opinion, for a couple of years. But that doesn't mean that it can't build itself up to back to where other clubs have got to over a period. You look at Yeovil, they've done it. That's how they've put it together. I mean, Tranmere managed 800,000, but they were never going to be anywhere near. Yeovil is the model that you look at, and that's half of what Town have got.
I mean, Chris, where do you think that that reduced playing budget will put Swindon in sort of competing in League One next season?
I certainly don't think we'll be fretting ourselves as to whether we're going up automatically or slipping into the playoffs at the end of next season. I think that's a completely unrealistic goal. It was interesting to see in Jed McCrory's Q&A with the advert that he says that the goal now is Championship within 3 years. Now, it looks like they are, as Sam says, stripping everything and rebuilding from the bottom up. So players like Ferry, De Vera and DeVita going, they're sort of a luxury now. It feels like that because Ferry was played out of position, it feels like he wasn't seen as a key player by Kevin McDonald, and as is his right. He's the manager. He lives and dies by the decisions that he makes. So it almost the same with DeVita, where he doesn't specialise in a position necessarily. It's just a luxury that we can no longer afford, essentially. You can't have those squad players anymore. That position will be taken by young players, and you can't expect them to, you know, they can punch above their weight, but they're not going to consistently perform because they need time to develop. So the key thing will be the experienced heads that you have as the spine of the team, and you know, players like Wes, Darren Ward, McCormack, if he stays, they'll become so important, and you know, injuries will be even further felt. So mid-table next year, I'd be happy with.
I agree. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I think if they manage to have a season where you're comfortable and can get to the last 10 games and be seriously looking at how you build the next year to challenge for a playoff place, that would be a good season, and I'd be happy with the finish anywhere between 8th and 16th next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and sort of other than sort of, you know, the playing side of things, got a question from Michael Madden on Facebook, asked that the new owners have a business plan based on the County Ground being used as a concert venue, however this hasn't proved viable in the past, Elton John and Bryan Adams. You know, what is there anything that you've seen to make it kind of clear that it's going to work in the future? I mean they place a lot of emphasis on that to generate £1.8 million worth of profit, which
by the figures, to be honest. It remains to be seen whether it goes ahead, whether it happens, and if it does, when it does, if it gets anywhere near that. They're saying it. I mean, this is the whole issue with the way the current board is perceived by people, is that a lot of people just flatly refuse to believe anything they say, even when they are telling the truth. I can't comment exactly on if they are lying at any point, because only they know outright whether they're lying. But a lot of what they say hasn't yet come to fruition because it's a very short space of time. It may or may not. Again, the 1.8 seems a huge amount of money for 6 concerts a year. When previously it was, I think they brought in something like 65,000 for those individual concerts. So one slot, 65,000 for Bryan Adams and another for 50,000, I think it was, for Elton John. So we'll see. If it does come through, then well, if it, you can't complain apart from Marcus Cassidy. Our award-winning groundsman might be able to complain.
No, he's not the best pleased.
He's not happy
probably,
no.
about it. So,
but he's. I know that he has been spoken to on several occasions by the board about how it can be protected, etc. But it's about other revenue streams. You've got to live within your means, and if within your means means you have to use other options of bringing in money, then why not? They've got a venue there, which under the previous administration, for all the good they did for the footballing side of things, and the amount of money that Andrew Black invested in the squad, there wasn't a lot that was used with the ground and the commercial side. The sponsorship deals are fairly minimal. You see by the Samsung stuff, it's only worth around about 60,000, plus the add-ons that it gets by bringing in other companies like 442 and EA Sports, which is all included in that package. It gets up to about 80,000 a year. Yeah, if someone local was brought in for £150,000-£200,000, a local company, for that amount of money, people would probably turn around and say, well, this board can't keep hold of major national brands. So it's a difficult position for them to be in, and I think that they have to maximise it. Again, I don't really see them bringing in £1.8 million a year through concerts.
And if they're not bringing in the people to watch the games, then they need to use the means that they have to maximise profits. If you're saying that a sponsorship deal is worth £65,000 a year, and they can, from past experience, bring that in from hosting one event, then you've doubled that revenue, which is shrewd.
Well, they're saying that they'd be able to bring in what 300,000
per
double weekend, so £150,000 a concert, which is 3 times that. Which is why I going on the past figures, I'm intrigued as to how they come to that figure. But it's a deal that they have agreed with this company called Avalon. I would say that company is run by a man called Harry Kerr, who's previously tried to be involved in football in a similar capacity at Portsmouth. He tried to use Fratton Park as a venue, that never got off the ground. So we'll see whether it does get off the ground. I'm a little sceptical, because I also know that they are seriously thinking about whether or not the pitch will take it, especially with the number that they're planning on doing, and within a relatively short sort of 4-month time frame. So they are being conscientious about Marcus Cassidy and his feelings, and the quality of the pitch, which, as we found out this week, you know, they've renovated at £20,000 a season for the last 5 years. So there's been significant money invested in that. There's no point in bringing in concerts, which are going to then cost more to renovate the pitch afterwards, and you're just going to end up with the minimal amount made.
We'll see. I mean, the other thing with concerts is, you know, hopefully the plans for the redevelopment of the Oasis will come to fruition quite soon as well, and that's going to provide a substantial concert venue in itself. So, and that's going to be around every day, and it's going to be a bespoke venue. So whether the County Ground could actually compete with that to provide events cost effectively and attract the right people, I seriously doubt that the county ground would be used. I mean, the actual capacity would be slightly larger than what the Oasis would be. I think that's going to be about sort of 7,000, 8,000 sort of capacity, if you know what I was saying. So, not quite sure, but we'll wait and see on that one.
Yeah.
See what happens. Sort of, as well, sort of, you know, about sort of responses from McCrory. I mean, Chris, one of the questions here from STFC 007 asks, does the request to submit written questions and then McCrory and Murrell avoiding answering them properly, in his opinion, indicate no real desire for open communication?
I thought that, yeah, having read the responses, I thought it was a bit PR speaky. I thought that it was meant to be more of a conversation, but maybe that's just because it came across that way, because it was, you know, written down. I wasn't there, so, you know, you said that it did flow a bit better.
Yeah, it flowed at the meeting itself. A lot was said, but not much was said, if you know what I mean. Yeah, it's difficult.
I think that it's one of those things that from looking at it from a distance, it seems that they will answer questions on things that they want to answer. Mm. So, you know, he's been very vocal on Twitter and, you know, he's direct in that way and, you know, brought people in to get signed shirts and all the rest of it, this PR charm offensive, which sort of is working. Mm. But when the real questions that people want to know and the real... They might just not know the answers yet.
Well, they might, but I mean that's the issue. I mean, they're coming in, they're business people. They've never had questions thrown at them previously necessarily, and they're at football club. It is business. They own it. They obviously do. It's their own private thing. But there's a lot of people who care and want to know about it, and very inquisitive people like myself
and for
the Supporters Trust and other people. Sam wants to know a bit as well about what's going on.
I think as well, just because we've been burned so many times in the past, that there is a healthy degree of cynicism with any owner, really.
Well, I think any owner of a football club is going to have the stuff that they want to be kept private or they do not want to discuss publicly. For me, it's not necessarily the individual topics that we're picking up on. It's the way in which they've come across in general over the last 2.5 months. They're not media savvy. They're not PR savvy. They don't really know how we work within our industry, the media. And so that doesn't put them in great stead. However, I would hop back to the time, well, round about this time last year when I found out about Andrew Black looking to sell up then. I never managed to get a story out about it back then because I couldn't get anything concrete. But I was sniffing around and asking questions around about the time that the accounts were late and was asking questions about that. And I was quite point blankly frozen out by Jeremy Ray and by Nick Watkins, both of whom I get on with perfectly well, who would not give anything to me about it. In fact, they positively warned me off going anywhere near it. They wouldn't be open or I wouldn't say honest about it. They wouldn't be open about it. They wouldn't be transparent about it. There's obviously good reason for it. They got very close to selling the club before, apparently the major investor died. But I would say that this happens on other occasions. The issue here is that it's hugely public because everything has been played out in public and it's been so dramatic because of the timescale that has been required of it. They haven't been good with the fans in terms of explaining what they're doing. I would say that they have tried to incentivise fans to go to games, to interact with them, to participate with them. But a lot of it, because of the nature in which they've come in and the poor way that they've communicated what they've tried to communicate, has ended up in a vicious cycle where they say something which isn't quite right, which probably they didn't mean, which might have been misinterpreted, misunderstood, and it's just snowballed, and it just keeps on snowballing because they haven't been able to stop it. And it's very hard to stop a snowball this size.
Yeah. And there's so many people interested in what they're saying.
Exactly.
As well.
So I think, honestly, he would like to have a good open line of communications. I think they all would. They just don't really know how. And I think that's where it comes down to. I don't buy that they're crooks. People saying that I've tried to look into every avenue that people have suggested. No one who has suggested it to me or via social media or via internet forums has come up with any substance yet. I'm always happy to look at substance if they can. I haven't seen it. I don't think they're particularly good at letting fans know what they're doing in a way that the previous board let fans knew what they were doing. And that doesn't mean to say that the previous board let fans know what they were doing on a level to which fans are now demanding this board do. Yeah. So if you understand a very convoluted way of explaining it, I'll try and shut up now.
Okay, we'll go back to the sort of the football. We've got a little sort of quiz and you with a couple of stats that I've sort of collated over this course of the season. So let's see how you get on with this. listeners try as well. Okay then, so which outfield player has been an unused substitute the most times this season, and how many?
Who cares?
Who cares? Well,
we're both having a guess.
Have a guess. I want an opportunity to use these pointless stats. We're quickly running through.
Okay. Unused subs.
Outfield. Yeah. Okay.
It's a midfielder.
Oh, okay. It's got to be Navarro then, if it's a midfielder.
It's Navarro. 16 times, yeah.
16 times.
16 times, yeah. Easy one here. Which players?
It's good job they've got a new dugout.
comfortable,
yeah.
Which players played the most number of minutes this season?
Oh, any player?
Any player.
Where's Fodringham?
Easy one.
That's easy. Couldn't be a trick question, could it?
4,851 minutes. Which player who's played at least 5 games has the highest lose percentage? He was a lone player. We did sign him.
Bissoni was what was coming through, yeah.
It's Bissoni, yeah. 50% from his 6 games. Didn't stay around for very long.
apparently didn't stay around for very long anyway. No. Let's see what happened at Oldham.
No. Which of Aidan Flint, Joe De Vera, Alan McCormack or Darren Ward has conceded the most number of goals when playing in defence?
Ward.
What do you think, Sam?
Flint.
Yeah, Flint, 40. Ward 38, McCormack 33, De Vera 30. So he's a bit boring, aren't he? Who's been awarded the most number of yellow cards this season?
Fodringham. McCormack.
Yeah, McCormack with 10. Good one there. Which player's won the most clean sheets? Also, which midfielder?
Simon Ferry.
Nope.
Most clean sheets. McCormack?
No. Matt Ritchie, 14.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
Which striker's highest strike rate? Shots to goal ratio.
Adam Rooney?
Nope.
It's definitely Story? James Collins.
Yeah, Miles Story, 60%. Next behind him was James Collins with 19%, so get Story playing next season, please. But he didn't have many shots, though.
Has anyone else noticed that he sort of looks a bit like Tom Daley? No?
I haven't really seen that resemblance.
Have you seen him in swimming trunks?
No, when he was walking up to take that penalty, I just thought, he looks a bit like Tom Daley.
I can't say I've ever seen that.
No? Oh, okay.
How many goals have been scored this season from a direct free kick, and who scored?
I suggest there's been one.
One, yeah. I phrased it differently.
I don't know how many, but I would guess Matt Ritchie.
Yeah, Matt Ritchie against Bournemouth at home. Just the one this season, which is a bit surprising.
Well, they started the first half of the season trying to do 17 passes.
That's right.
It did work. It was fantastic. Against Brighton. That was superb.
How many players have scored 100% of their goals from within the 6-yard box? And who?
Oh, I saw
Darren Ward.
Yeah, Darren Ward's one.
Joe De Vera,
there we go. Yeah, Joe De Vera's just got one goal and Darren Ward's got 2 goals. And how many games has Troy Archibald Henville missed through injury?
Well, I think he's played 11. So, we should figure it. 38?
32. Unused sub.
But when he comes back next season, it'll be like a new signing, won't it?
Yeah, if he can get over his knee problem.
Yeah.
And sort of moving on, that's the end of the pointless quiz. Sorry about that. I just wanted to just use them, collect them. I won't bother next year. Chris, do you have any sort of useful tips for surviving the sort of pre-season break? No football? No European Championships or World Cup? Or
athletics. You know, athletics is always great. Cricket?
Yep.
If the weather's good, it's going to check down in a minute.
Yeah.
Sam's going to play this afternoon, aren't you?
Oh, well, I meant to be making my 2013 debut in Wiltshire League Division 6 this afternoon, but think I might be watching the Spanish GP qualifying.
How would you describe yourself as a cricketer? All-rounder? Or?
I'm a wicketkeeper batsman who doesn't hang around.
Bit of an Angus Fraser type.
Well, Angus Fraser was an opening bowler, so I've never done that.
Brush up on that.
Yeah. In terms of surviving the summer, just try and relax. Yeah. However you do it, go away, have a break, read a book, sit down in the middle of nowhere, look at the stars, whatever you do, just try and relax, because the last 9 months has been ridiculously stressful for everybody involved. I think it's time that we just all took a month, only a month, until the next window opens, until the players come back from holiday, and just try and calm down.
Have a break. Well, in the next couple of weeks before the end of the month, we've got a little bit of a celebration on the wash bag, sort of looking back to the 93 playoff final, 20th anniversary coming up. I've got a number of articles coming up, and also hopefully we'll have a special podcast in a fortnight with a special guest. Wait and see what's going to happen on that, and hopefully that'll come to fruition. But it's been a great season in the end. We did get in the playoffs. It carried on quite well. It didn't end up how it wanted to. I thought it was good. I thought we'd just finished 10th. So,
yeah,
I'm happy. Plenty to write about on the website. Probably going to happen again over the summer. And we're not going to have a break, Sam.
No, I know we're not going to have a break. You'll be on holiday.
I'm going
to try and take 2 weeks away at the beginning of June. Yeah, I'm probably going to get somewhere. I'm going to get a phone call within 5 minutes. And I'll be hopping straight back.
Something's happened. Yeah. So thanks for listening, and speak to you soon. Bye then.